it's our... It's
game time.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
That needs to be a soundbite.
What? Banished! There you go. Use it for Chris, too. Banished! No, he's banished. Anyway. Hello, welcome back to the Gamer's Haven podcast. This is your intrepid hosts, Ethan, Nathan, and Jeremy. And we are back after a long hiatus of recording because of life, the universe, and everything.
Well, we finally digested all the turkey that has been shoved down our throats for the last 2 weeks. And
hey, it was tasty turkey. I had two different turkey, two different Thanksgiving dinners. So yeah, four. Wow. Yeah.
Two for family and two for friends.
Tasty. What about you, Jeremy? How was your Thanksgiving? It's good, bad, or ugly?
Just had the one.
Had the one and it was good.
We had barbecue chicken was or barbecue your, turkey.
Was that at your mom's place or
no?
Would you go out to
Robin's
family? Cool.
Yeah, we had deep fat fried turkey.
Ooh, that sounds horribly fattening but tasty.
Well, barbecue. You pull off the skin and you get to the turkey underneath and it's not too bad on the grease factor. But what they did was they actually pre-smoked the turkey in apple wood for like 4 hours before they deep fat fried it, and nice. It was just tasty. I ate way too much, made myself sick.
Oh yeah, that's what you're supposed to do on Thanksgiving. We had brined turkey, so we brined our turkey before we ate it. So
I've never had it that way.
Barbecue with instead of barbecue sauce, maple syrup.
Oh yeah, I've had maple syrup with my turkey before. That's some good stuff. It's like
it was wonderful.
It's basically if you've ever had the sausage and maple syrup. Take it like that with turkey.
Also, all the pumpkin.
We're making
pumpkin
all of our
cupcakes were left there, point. But we had pumpkin cupcakes.
My sister pawned off a whole pumpkin pie on me.
I would rather have pumpkin cupcakes.
Did you shake your fist at her and go, curse you?
Yes, I did. And then I ate the whole pie in 2 days.
Even after having a homemade pumpkin pie, I would rather have the pumpkin cupcakes.
Were they that good?
Were they the ones that Robin made?
Yes.
Yeah, they were delicious.
Oh.
Because they're like pumpkin pie on the top. They have that texture. They're a little gooey. Then there's a cupcake underneath, and you can either put caramel or like whipping stuff. The caramel's the best. And under Weight Watchers, they were only 1 point.
Yes.
So now they're probably like two.
Under the new plan, yeah.
These we don't know about under the new plan.
Yeah, we don't know. Freaking
but my God, those were good.
Oh, that's too bad. I may have to try those sometime. Save me one.
Going through all the updates, as of this recording, it is December 3rd today, and I've got about a week and a half left of school. We're really more 2 weeks of school to be.
I've got 3 weeks of freedom before my final class starts.
It's been crunch time the last several weeks for me and for my stuff. That's why I haven't been on, at this point, I haven't been on the forums. I haven't really done much of anything. I've got a whole backlog of stuff that's uploaded and not posted on the website right now, so.
I've been fighting sinus infection and the flu.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky. I talked to my doctor today because I was still sick and I haven't been able to get rid of it, and there was a possibility I was going to have to go to the hospital today. So thankfully
that didn't
happen, because otherwise it would be Becca sending you a text message saying, sorry guys, you guys can come over and record, but I won't be there because I'm in the hospital on IVs.
No, we would record from the hospital.
Yeah, we would just call all the equipment in.
I don't know if they'd actually let you bring in that much electronics.
That's
we'd make
true.
It work. This This is.
I just didn't want to argue freedom of the press, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not there, so thankfully we don't have to come up with
these wires belong to him. He's a cyborg, and we need to plug him in.
Exactly. Yes. This is entirely for his health.
Yes.
And stuff.
I'm sure that would work. But yeah,
I did get out to see Harry Potter last weekend with the family. That was
the general consensus I've heard from everybody I've talked to is it's too compressed.
Well, it's good, but it suffers from the last movie as well. I mean, I didn't like the last movie too much.
They compressed 2 minutes of the story.
It has lots of exposition, but this one has more action in it than the last movie did, which is good. But,
yeah,
you know, I went over when I did a review for it. We did a review for it on Red Phone Zone, and it was pretty much our complaints about it are all based on our initial problems that came with the book, rather than the movie itself. So the movie was a good adaptation of the book, but it took all the bad stuff too. But anyway.
Yeah. Now, is it fairly accurate to the book, or did they cut out a bunch of stuff? Because
they still cut out a bunch of stuff.
Because there's a lot of stuff they've cut out of the previous versions that wouldn't make sense to have it in the last, this latest one. Like the wedding at the beginning of the book, you know, before the wedding hits the Shan.
The wedding's in the movie.
So the wedding's in the movie, but do they explain...
Who's getting married? Yeah. No. Not much.
They do do they explain that he was horribly mauled by a werewolf in the previous book? Yeah.
He has wounds. Yeah. That's about it.
At the very end, they're going to just stand up and say Dumbledore is gay.
Yes. I think that's awesome.
That's all. That's going to be the end. Like, it's going to go to credits, and then suddenly Dumbledore is going to jump up there, and he's going to be like, I am fabulous! And be like, Dumbledore is gay.
Fabulous! And then disappear in a shower. Yeah. A shower of lavender.
And then I kind of figured he was gay when I read the last book with his description. I was like, this is retarded.
What have we been up to gaming-wise? I mean, the superhero game has started. We had a character creation session and a regular session, and then I had to cancel the last two games just because of school. But we are playing this Sunday.
Well, one of my players for my Pathfinder game has gone to Texas for a temporary job. It could be there anywhere from 3 to 6 months or longer.
Or forever.
Or forever.
What happens. But
well, we don't know. But the thing is, because of that...
Right now, it's just a temporary job.
Yeah, we put the kibosh on my game.
Yeah.
And in the interim, Andre is running a Savage Worlds game based on Warhammer 40K. We had one session of that, which I don't know about everybody else, but I had a great time.
I did too. I need to get a better feel for the character and a feel for the setting. But
Becca was a little concerned. She felt like she was bringing everybody down because she was sick that day. That was the first day she had the flu, so she was not doing well, but I had a great time. It looked like Andre had a great time running it because he got to do all those orc voices because he loves doing the orc voices. And I'm hoping that's going to be posted sometime soon.
It will be as soon as I can. It probably won't be till the end of this week or probably middle of this week.
Meanwhile, in the interim, while we're waiting for the Michael to get back, we need to get the synopsis for my game recorded, and I'm going to need your guys' help as well, those of you who played in the last game.
I'm going to need people's help just to remember everything anyway. So.
Yeah, because this game's been going for 5 years. It's like a lot of crap's happened in 5 years outside the game.
Yeah. What about you, Jeremy? Your game's been running as well.
We had a couple of sessions. We ended with you guys in the Feywild, and then we decided to do... in January, as long as I get my stuff
we're basically
back.
We're taking December off because of the holidays.
Right.
And then
we will do the Quest for the Silver Santas, hopefully.
And what's the subtitle of this one?
The subtitles for this one is Wrath of the Sugar Plum and then Fairies.
Wrath of the Sugar Plum Fairies. Very nice. Very nice.
Is it going to have
maybe.
You got to find a heavy metal version of it, though.
Well, we'll see what we can find.
If I can get it, there is going to be a polar bear swarm.
Yes, you showed me the one you had made. That was amusing.
I'm sad that I missed most of these games, but in some ways I'm relieved that I don't have to manage to somehow survive through the polar bear swarm.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the Silver Santa games is that you can die pretty much with impunity.
This doesn't really matter.
Hopefully after this Silver Santa's game, we don't wait another year and a half to play again.
That would be nice.
That would be nice. I would like that.
Do you mean another, like, Silver Santa's? Or like
saying the actual game. Because we played that, and then, like, a year and a half went by before we played those characters again.
No, I'm thinking I would rather, that month or the month after.
Yes, that
jump back into the Feywild.
But what are we talking about today? We're actually getting back on track with some more regular episodes, and we are talking about fear. Today, sort of.
Not necessarily fear gaming, but actually inserting fear or instilling fear in the players through the game.
You know, talking about that disconnect between player and character and how you can try to get fear into there and not necessarily talking about horror games in general, but pretty much anything.
Well, you can have fear in anything. Horror games actually don't really... Mm-hmm. If you look at the layout of games like Call of Cthulhu, yes, there is a lot of horror in the games because of the creatures, but actually what you're instilling into the characters is a sense of foreboding and suspense, which puts them on the edge of their seat rather than making them terrified. And you don't terrify them until the last instant before you kill.
Exactly. And we are going to talk about that right when we come back right after these messages.
Noble Knight Games has been serving the needs of thousands of gamers worldwide since 1997. Huge selection of over 30,000 unique products, including discounts on most in-print games of up to 50% off or more. Noble Knight Games is the place for out-of-print RPGs, board games, war games, collectible card games, miniatures, and all things game-related. They ship worldwide and will purchase or trade your titles you no longer need, new, or used. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Just visit www.noblenight.com or visit our website for direct access to thousands of new, out-of-print, and in some cases, one-of-a-kind items.
This is the Vorpal Network.
You paying attention now?
Yes.
All right. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking
about. Hey, we do know what we're talking about. You know, we called the whole Hugo Weaving Red Skull thing, remember?
Oh, right. Fine. Where was it? The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about all kinds of gaggles.
Aaron, could you cut it with the gaggles thing? It's not working for me.
All right. Fine. The Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games. Hey,
don't forget that we talk about, you know, Bruce Campbell and Christopher Lee, obviously.
Natalie Portman.
All right, guys! I'm trying to do a commercial for the Red Phone Zone, where we talk about movies, comics, video games, tabletop gaming, all kinds of other geek stuff.
You mean that show we broadcast on Ustream?
Yes!
Wednesday, 8 Central Standard Time.
Right, at redphonezone.com. Now, can you guys just give me a minute to get this promo done?
Sure. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
All right, from the top. Hello and welcome to the Red Phone Zone.
Aaron, we need a tiebreaker. Okay, who would win in a fight with Galactus?
Anti-Monitor.
Galactus and Anti-Monitor. Come on.
I think the more important question would be who would win in a fight between me and you two idiots.
I guess we don't know what we're talking about.
Game.
And we are back. Today we are talking about fear and how to be scared and be scared in games. Run scared stuff, that sort of thing. We did talk about this bit in horror gaming many years ago at this point, as actually our 4-year anniversary has now passed us by a couple weeks back. So
we first started recording
4 years. Yes.
Well, and this is almost our Christmas special.
Yes, this is almost our Christmas special. We should be able to get together one more time before Christmas, and that should be our Christmas stuff. So,
yeah.
But we're going to talk about being scary and being scared and running that stuff.
So. Being scary is different than being scared. I mean, I'm just scary just on general principle that I'm just scary looking.
That's true, you are.
But actually being...
This is why we make you wear a bag over your head when we're talking to you.
Yeah. God forbid I remove it for any period of time. The screaming doesn't stop for hours.
No.
But being scary is considerably different than actually running a scary game. Mm-hmm. Because you can be scary in a game, and you can do it in ways that most people don't really think about. Tough and go, that was kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest way I find to get scary is that when we're playing a game, most of my players are loud. We're always, you know, there's a lot of cross chatter and stuff like that.
And I'm always breaking the mood by inserting Monty Python quotes.
Well, yeah, but the thing is what I've noticed that works well with our gaming group, and I'm sure you've noticed it by now as well, is I talk quieter and quieter and quieter, and everybody has to get...
Mm-hmm.
lower and lower with their volumes and frequency to hear what I'm saying to know what's going on, because they're still curious about what's going on, but you know, everybody's, all the characters, you know, cross banner and stuff like that.
I think ultimately we also realize that any kind of gaming session is, it's your friends getting together and you're doing this to be social with one another and have a good time, so you're always going to have that levity in there, and I think the problem I run into with running fear in a game or playing fear is that there's that disconnect between you and your characters.
Yeah.
It's your character is walking down this dark corridor with there's blood dripping from the walls, but you as the player are not walking down this corridor with blood dripping from the walls, so you don't feel that anxiety.
Because we're not stupid.
Yeah. Exactly. And we wouldn't be, we'd necessarily, in that situation, we'd go call the police. Anyway.
Yeah, we're not, like I said, we're not stupid. In situations like
not
that,
if we have magical powers.
And Jeremy's like, it's like that every time I go home.
I mean, you know, guns and, you know, shooting magical rays.
Exactly.
I mean, that kind of equalizes.
If I was at all proficient in firing a firearm at something large that isn't human running down at me, I don't think I'd be in the IT field. I'd be in the military or something.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is when is any one of us going to be faced with a situation where walls are dripping blood and there's a giant hulking humanoid creature and you've got a Tommy gun?
If you fire enough lead in that direction, something will hit. And if that doesn't work,
logic dictates that you kill it.
Well, no, not if he's that too big. But if that doesn't work, you hit the person next to you in the kneecap, and they'll go down while you leave.
Well, I think the thing I always run into is utilizing fear, not necessarily in a horror situation or anything like that, but say you're in a doing interrogations or questioning type of stuff, and it's not necessarily even it could be player characters questioning NPCs. It could be the other way around. It's hard to emulate the right type of environment that you need for that, because in an interrogation environment, you're gonna be on edge, you're gonna be anxious. I mean, there's a lot of things going through your mind that you can't do as a player. You just can't put yourself into that mode as a player or as a GM. Aside from taking your players and locking them in a small room for 72 hours.
Just
and
leaving.
Bringing them out and then making them play, which we don't.
Or waterboarding them.
Yes, or waterboarding your players. We do not condone any kind of torture of, or inhumane.
Wouldn't that be like, wouldn't that be live action?
Yes, that'd be
LARPing. That would be LARPing.
And as we all know, we don't like LARPing much here. So.
Not with waterboarding.
No. We may like to beat up on each other with foam-padded PVC sticks, but no, we don't like to be waterboarded.
So, because we need the information out of this elf, you're playing an elf, right? we're going to waterboard you. Couldn't you just cast a truth spell on me? No.
This is casting a truth spell on you.
Have a nice day. I mean, this is torture.
The new rules guy is from Guantanamo Bay. Well, they shut it down. They had to go do something. So
it's Giro. Giro yeah. Instead of Nero.
Yes, it's Giro.
Giro.
Guantanamo Bay.
Guantanamo role-playing.
Yeah. Guantanamo Bay, wow, exact okay. Role-playing organization.
Where Giro. Anybody who speaks English is the bad guy.
But like in the Deadlands game, the interrogation stuff with you and Robin's character, you know?
Yeah, but...
You always have that... I always find with players, especially depending on the level, really all the time, is players have that disconnect from their characters, and so they feel invincible.
But part of that is also the character too.
Oh yeah, yeah, no.
Because if your character is like, look, you're gonna saw off my arm and it's gonna hurt, so let's get it over with, so I can pass out. Am I scared? Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But you're gonna do it anyway. I mean, now, if I was sitting there, if we switched it around, I'd be like, don't saw off my arm, oh God, please.
Right.
But that particular, like, John, he'd be like, I'm not going to really like this.
What I'm saying, though, is not necessarily that character, but...
Well, yeah, just in general.
Interrogations in general and sort of inciting that kind of anxiety.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the situation, because, like, I think one particular role-playing situation with fear that I liked was recent, well, I say recent, it was still probably a year or so ago, when Robin's character in the Thoth game died and was pulled to Vecna's realm.
Right.
Her character was basically incapable of doing anything other than wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an immediate... I have to give her props, because there was an immediate fear and meekness about going from, I am this, kind of tough, you know, barbarian archer-esque to, oh my God, I'm in some sort of hell.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a disconnect, and depending on the players, that's true.
Continue.
Who's doing what? Get him away from those boxes.
So, I mean, that's difficult, but at the same time, I think that disconnect is okay.
Yeah.
And that's why there's rules you can always do. I mean...
Well, I never want to do the whole cop-out of, as a GM, of saying to the player...
No.
It's like, okay, well, your character would be scared of this, so he would give up this information. I think that isn't... It really takes the... That disconnects them even more, and I think pisses the player off.
Oh, yeah.
Because it pisses me off as a player.
But you can always... You can always still do... You can always still make it into a rolling type thing where, okay...
That doesn't cheapen it as much.
Right. What you can say is, okay, well, this is what's occurring. Your will is being beaten down.
Right.
How you act is up to you. You know, where you're trying to buy in. And some players are able to buy in.
Mm-hmm. And some aren't.
And some aren't. It kind of depends on the level of... One, how they're feeling that evening, and two, their experience in role-playing itself, because a younger gamer not necessarily is going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
There is too much of a disconnect. But, you know, fine. While it might piss us off, for some people it's like, oh, well, I understand a dice roll.
Mm-hmm.
So I am tortured and or whatever, and
I'm terrified.
Dice roll. Okay, so I'm going to talk, or I failed my.
One way of doing something like that is having them make their whatever role that you deem is necessary for it, and then based on their amount of success or failure, if they succeed, they succeed. If they fail, it's like, okay, you're going to give up three pieces of information.
Right.
What information do you give up? You know, that
right.
sort of thing.
And how they act really doesn't matter as long as the outcome is... Because that's true with normal human nature anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just because someone finally decides to talk, they could still be somewhat belligerent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could still be, I'm not actually afraid, but I've decided I do not want to be punched in the stomach anymore. Mm-hmm. Or,
and as a GM, it's easier, I think, to play it as an NPC. Well, you're questioning this dude, and as a GM, you have the luxury of looking at it and going, well, okay, this guy is, you know, Joe Schmo peon here, and these guys just killed 14 of his comrades. So, a lot of times, I look at it like, okay, this guy's gonna pretty much tell them what they want to know and hope that he doesn't die horribly. But, you know, on occasion, you're going to run into the NPCs that want to be belligerent and not talk. But as far as running that type of fear, and this all comes into that disconnect I'm talking about, is there are ways to take a character or take a player, and really I think you just want to need to rationalize it with them and talk to them and say, hey, this is sort of the atmosphere you're having here. It sort of goes into... How you basically how you set the scene,
and also you have to define it. Is it an actual supernatural fear effect, or is it just fear? Because going into a scary ass castle dripping with blood, it may not necessarily be a supernatural fear, and so therefore it's okay for the players to come up with their own how they act within the fear. So, like, some people will crack jokes. That's perfectly fine. If it's supernatural fear, it's like, I don't really care how you do it, but this is the outcome that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, you did not pass that save. So this is what you see, you know. So if you define that, and then, I mean, you just build on the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And
it definitely goes into the type of game that you're playing. I mean... Obviously, with the Call of Cthulhu game, you have to have the right type of atmosphere. And with any game, you have to have the right players.
The best thing to nurture in a Call of Cthulhu game, and this is where a lot of players, or a lot of GMs, mess up on their first game, is they assume that they have to have an atmosphere of fear, making their players perpetually scared or terrified that something horrible is going to happen. That's not your goal.
No.
Your goal is to put the players in suspense. They have no idea what's going on, weird stuff's going on, and they're scared that way.
You had a good point early on, is that really you just want them to be scared just for a very brief moment before...
Just before everything falls apart.
Because really it's the anticipation, it's that tension that builds up. Being in that sort of fear state for a four-hour game session...
Dulls the edge of the fear.
Is it's boring. Ultimately, it's like, well, okay, now what? But if you have them in a comfort zone and then occasionally rip them out of that comfort zone, I think that's going to build it a lot more.
Yeah, it works really well that way. And the thing is what a lot of people don't stop to do is a lot of people that play Call of Cthulhu or that run Call of Cthulhu, they read a lot of H.P. Lovecraft and a lot of the Mythos stories. The thing is they don't...
Or stuff like that.
Yeah, or stories like that, but they don't follow the same pattern. Mm-hmm. If you look at if you look at any of the H.P. Lovecraft stories, they start off very sedate, very soothing, very comfortable, and they build. They don't build horror; they build suspense. You don't know what's going on, and you don't have any idea. Yeah, or you don't understand what's going on
from a point of view.
And you have these moments where there's horrible terror, like the Watcher in the Walls, the one with the creature in the castle. I can't remember the name of it. Where
The Outsider?
No, it's not The Outsider. I can't remember the name of it. I have to look at my book. But basically, it's the goriest moment out of any H.P. Lovecraft story I've ever read, where he's with his friend going to study the place, and there's a storm, and his friend thinks he sees something outside the window. He gets up and looks out. There's a flash of lightning, and his friend's sitting on the ground, keeps talking to him. Up to this point, it's been suspenseful, but nothing horrifying's happened. He goes up to grab his friend, pulls his friend back, and his friend's face has been clawed out by the creature that lives in the castle, this flying creature, which is absolutely terrifying because you're sitting there and everything's going fine, everything's going, oh my God, his face is gone! Mm-hmm. And it goes back to being sedate and starts building up the suspense again. And you get to the end of the story, and what H.P. Lovecraft was known for doing was horror really hit you in the last
one way to
six
think about
or seven
it is,
pages.
One way to think about it is a gun, is a revolver, is you have... Basically, you see the hammer coming back and coming back and coming back and coming back, and the trigger being pulled, and you're waiting for the bang. And it's just that anticipation of it, and then bang, it happens again, and then they start pulling the trigger again. Type of thing, you know.
The way it works though is what you do is you don't put them in that fear mode. Basically, the best way to put it was you see the gun, you see the gun, you see the gun, you see the gun, you see the bang. Yeah. Okay. Oh, so the anticipation's there. It's the whole, oh boy, boom, oh, it's done. Okay, back. Oh God, he's still got the gun.
Right.
You know, it's not the whole trigger being pulled back. You don't see that. All you see is he has a gun. You don't see him making any motions to fire it, and then suddenly it's gone off.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're hit with the terror. Up to that point, you're anticipating something, and you're on the edge of your chair in suspense, but it's Alfred Hitchcock did it best.
Oh, yeah. He's the master of suspense.
Yeah, he truly earned the name Master of Suspense because he keeps you in a state. But what he does is he does it in this roller coaster way. You calm down, you relax, and suddenly he starts building the suspense again. That makes for a much more interesting environment for the players to play in. Granted, it's very, very hard to do when you have players making jokes and jabs at each other, but the thing is it can still be done. It's been successfully done. Some of my games have been incredibly successful in that. Others, not so much.
Right.
But the Call of Cthulhu game I ran for the Halloween party, the players had a great time, even though for the most part they weren't terrified until like the last 10 minutes of the game when the fit hit the Shan and everything fell apart and suddenly they were being assaulted by a giant massive monster that was trying to devour the truck they were in. So build suspense rather than fear. Putting fear in characters is easy because it can be done with dice rolls. Putting fear in the players... Mm-hmm. is not as easy because, like as you said, the disconnect.
You're all sitting around a table, or sitting around a coffee table, sitting in a comfortable place where you're gaming and with friends, and so obviously you're not going to have that
discomfort your character is going to be feeling.
It's like, well, your character is knee deep in gore at this point, so obviously you're going to be a little edgy.
Yeah.
But I guess it really goes into how realistic you want to be. You know?
Well, and the fear also depends on what type of fear you're looking at, because if you're running high-level characters who are traveling across planes,
there's things out there. You need to look at it in that fashion.
But
you know?
Maybe the fear is more of, well, yeah, I travel the planes, but I always go back to this village.
Right.
This little podunk village where my family is, everything's fine. You show back up, and half the village has been hung or something, you know.
Or the village is gone.
Or
like, you know, not even talking just like gore or, you know,
no,
death.
It can be anything.
Like, you go back to the village,
and something's
completely
off.
Deserted.
It's completely deserted, and it looks like, there's still pies on the window. It's like everyone was going about their daily lives, and then just put everything down and left.
It's a different type of fear. You know? It's the fear of loss.
Fear of reprisal.
In your game, we come back to the town, and then, you know, things are in the Shadow Realm type of thing, so there's the town's... the town is empty, but we keep, out of the corner of our eye, we see a little movement
right.
here
and it's
there.
Just, you know, a different like type of fear. It's not the type of fear that's going to turn most adventurers into a cowering, you know,
The best way to put it for fear is it's like a, it's like the appropriate use of spice. Is it doesn't overpower, but it adds flavor.
Yeah,
and the best thing
and
is
it's the hardest. It's the hardest thing to do.
If you can build up some sort of NPC or critter, that when he shows up, the players go, "Holy crap! Mm-hmm. That is such and such. What are we going to do?" And it, the supernatural fear should only really be. That should only have to be used with certain monsters, or if, for some random reason, all that buildup doesn't work.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really, if played correctly, if you run into Strahd in Ravenloft, you should probably pee your pants.
Yeah.
Any supernatural abilities.
Nothing against me, but in real life, if we ran into Strahd in Ravenloft while playing Ravenloft, I'd probably piss my pants. Because I've seen his stats.
Well, and if we were going to Ravenloft, we'd hope we'd have a vehicle filled with gas, and we would keep driving until we would find certain realms that are not.
I'm talking about playing Ravenloft. Bad. Me myself would piss myself if we ran into Strahd. Oh, well, playing the game.
Hey, I've
nasty.
Pondered the survival rates in Ravenloft because if you drive down the road and there's fog everywhere, my first thought is not. Hey, it's fog. My first thought is, oh, God, Ravenloft.
And we don't want to end up in Topeka, that's for sure.
All right. I would actually think, I would probably think more along the lines of, oh, God, it's Frank Darabont's The Mist. Where's the giant, horrible tentacle monster with teeth?
That's in part of Ravenloft, too.
Oh.
So, I mean, for fear, it just depends. Supernatural fear, magical fear, the fear of the moment, you know, overcoming the fear, the disconnect that can occur.
And for the love of God, although it helps to make characters, players scared for a little while, don't overemphasize on people's real fears. If I came in here while playing Call of Cthulhu and dropped a snake on the table, I would have to be picking pieces of people out of walls as people went shooting out doors and windows and through the walls of the house.
Yeah,
there's a certain level of adding people's personal fears into it.
You don't want to cross that line.
That's a particular thing you don't...
There's a difference in scaring the characters and scaring the players. Right. And you don't want to damage relationships. You don't want to...
No.
You don't want to go too far.
You can use the fear items that the players themselves fear. But please, if you're using props, don't bring in props of things that people are afraid of. If I came in here and my wife's sister was playing and I chucked a spider on the table... Most of us would just be like, oh, look, it's a giant tarantula. She would be out the door and through the window in the garage and fleeing. She's absolutely terrified of spiders. I know this. You should know the players that you're running the game for. Please, please don't do that. I've had it done at a game where someone came out of the closet with a clown mask on, and we had a friend who has a phobia of clowns. And he literally curled up in the fetal position and screamed for 3.5 hours. It took that long to get him calmed down. Don't do that
to
your players.
That's a different use of props that probably should not occur.
No, that never should have happened.
Anything wearing a clown mask should not occur.
Yes, clowns in general should not occur.
Clowns are one of those horrible things that maybe shows the parody of the universe that they exist.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be funny, but all they do is terrify the living hell out of kids.
But at the same time, players also have to... remind their GMs, because it's difficult enough to keep track of everything. And yeah, if it comes to props, you should probably think better of it. Minis, though, in descriptions, it's like, okay, well, sorry, can't keep track of everything. I know Ethan's scared of
snakes. Phenophobic.
I'm not going to fling a snake at him. Am I going to put a snake model on the board in a fight? Yeah, I probably would.
Yeah, but that's not going to bother him.
The thing is, though...
But that's different.
That's part of knowing the players. Like, Melissa is not very happy with insects and spiders. And so, I mean, we try not to even use the little insect and spider models in the game.
I have
freaked out by it. That's understandable a bit because, you know, they're about the same size as a bug and whatnot.
A point.
But it's like...
But it's also, you know, it's plastic.
As a player, I think you need to talk to your GM and say, listen, this stuff bugs me, so if you would not do that, that'd
be I would great. Be appreciative, yeah.
And as a good GM is going to listen to that and go, okay, no problem.
Yeah.
Now as I know long that. It's like, okay, this gumdrop is a giant spider.
Right.
Yeah.
When you kill you know, it, you whatever. Can eat it. But then also you run into the issue about the description, and you're describing it, and people are getting all icky and whatever.
Oh, you and your cream corn.
You and your bloody cream corn ogre, Jeremy.
I mean, ogre females, I'm sorry. They're just a certain
man,
type.
If I had eaten that night, I would have thrown up. Well, that was how bad that description was.
And that
was.
Would have been part of what you saw.
I'm pretty sure
what
that...
What came out of you would be...
Yeah, analogous to what we are actually seeing on that horrible
portion.
Creature.
I mean, you know, ogre females, just, you know.
When you can make Justin, who is like the most strong iron stomach person, go, oh, God, I feel sick. That's a pretty bad description.
I do believe your wife said it best, how do you sleep at night? was my personal favorite.
You just shouldn't run into an ogre family.
No, they shouldn't
why?
Exist.
They shouldn't exist.
Why do you run into them?
They're a crime against reality, really.
When you see
that's why
player
characters are so desperate to kill them off.
When you see a campfire, why do you go towards it?
Because you don't know what's at the fire.
Why do you wander around the wilderness?
We're adventurers. It's our job. It's
well,
what we do.
It's
our job.
Then you're going to run into ogres.
Only in your games, Jeremy.
Yes.
But, oh.
But I think that's a good amount of discussion on that. Do you guys have anything else you want to add real quick before we wrap up?
Yeah, actually, I have one thing that actually works really well for instilling suspense, especially in suspenseful games, and that is the unknown terror. What I mean by that is that they know there's something there. Mm-hmm. They catch glimpses of it out of the corner of their eye. They hear it. They see some movement, but they never focus in on it. And it's always in a place that puts them in a position where they feel like their back is against the wall. Yeah. That will build suspense really, really quick. Works perfect. And the thing is you can do it with tons
fear,
of different things.
It's the fear of the unknown. I think some games lend it better to others. I think, though, even in a game like D&D, where
you can do that.
Don't come out and say, okay, well, a red dragon appears. It's like, okay, try to think of a much better description, you know.
You hear
like,
a rustling of the wind and a strange metallic scraping sound.
Actually, if you just say there's a red dragon, I'd be like, well, how big is it? Well, it's
see,
this size. I'm leaving.
And you all know I've always had problems with people going, oh, it's a Crenshaw or whatever. You know?
And I go,
and it's like,
no, it's
well,
not.
Well, you know, good players aren't going to go, well, it's a Crenshaw, but there are players that will do that who've memorized the monster manual and stuff like that.
Oh yeah,
I think it's great, and I heavily encourage taking monsters from and completely changing the way they look.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who cares? You know, and say, well, I want. Think outside the box. Do it in D&D, for God's sake. Use the monster manual, but don't say, okay, well, this monster looks like this. Make it up. Make up what it looks like entirely. Yeah. It's a giant wasp-like creature with four stingers and oozes green goo out of its eyes, and just use the stats for something. You know, who cares?
Yeah, like the shadow creatures in the last game where we're at the tunnel of the giant worm thing, and one of the players like, oh, they're hobgoblins. No.
Yeah, it's like, well, not necessarily.
It's like, did I describe them as hobgoblins? Well, they're around the same height. They're not hobgoblins.
Yeah.
and he's like, we'll kill them easy, and then they proceed to pummel the living crap
because
out of them.
Because nature is scary in general, if you think about it.
Plants that eat animals.
Well, and
enough
even
said.
Just a flood. A flood, a fire that's out of control,
or even
storms.
Natural animals. It's like, you're out in the woods, and a grizzly bear wanders by. Yeah, that's going to be scary.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Unless
shipwreck and land on the Komodo Islands?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Never mind there's 11-foot-long lizards that like to eat people there.
Still, it depends on the game, because if you're high enough level, you run up and punch it.
Yeah,
you're like...
Granted.
You go donkey punch to the bear.
With dealing with stuff of high level,
oh, no, that'd be
you're
awesome.
Dealing with powerful level characters, I think at that point you need to...
Have bigger bears?
Have bigger bears.
Dire bears.
Even have things that are really, you sort of get into the Slayer's motif of like, okay, well, you have this, yes, we can vomit hideous death on things, but we vomit hideous death on this thing and it didn't die.
Right.
We did it several times and it didn't die, so now what do we do?
Well, now we leave.
Yes.
In a very, very quick manner.
And so that's a good way to do it is to have a creature, have a monster in there that you know, it's like, oh, hey, it's a monster, let's go kill it. Well, what if none of that works? What if none of the usual stuff that the characters do work?
Or what happens if it
eats... You can do that in anything.
What happens
Superhero games, Savage Worlds,
what
whatever.
Happens if it eats your patron?
Mm-hmm.
Who's like the super powerful
what
whatever?
If it is your patron?
Well, that's... Then you ask for dental.
It's like all of a sudden your patron sort of sends back, well, now that you've done all my work for me, and sprouts eight legs out of his chest and the third eye, and you go,
You ask him so.
You go, wow, have you been watching John Carpenter's The Thing recently?
Yes.
Can I get extra arms?
Can I have three
actually,
extra?
Yes, that's part of the new
fact. Sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, never mind the fact that your mind will be turned into a gibbering mass.
That's okay. I got extra arms.
Extra arms.
And we have dental, right?
You had me at dental.
Yeah. Please note there might be some minor side effects, including death.
I think, as always, we're saying don't be constrained by the rules, but use the rules to your advantage.
Yeah.
If you're not doing a traditional type of encounter of person versus monster or whatever... and you're doing something like an interrogation or trying to promote that fear aspect, you know, don't be afraid to use the system to your advantage and say, well, you need to give me this willpower check or whatever, you know.
And don't be afraid to drop a disemboweled cow in the middle of their camp on their campfire when they're sitting there in the middle of the night.
Don't do it at the actual table. That would
be bad. That's nasty.
That would be awesome.
Here we go. Excuse me, I have to go to the bathroom. He starts coming down the stairs.
Level up with the door, guys.
What the hell is that?
Jeremy, is that a dead cow?
No.
There's not a dead cow.
That's a dead cow.
Dead cow falls in the middle of camp. Jeremy, we hate you. Or really, it'd be
Jeremy, we hate you. As we plug
We're
our
having
noses.
Steak!
Is barbecue going?
No, we're eating raw.
Oh.
All right.
I got an eye.
I got a wing. All right. Well, I think that's all she wrote on that, and we will be back right after this.
Okay, Carol, now you take these notes, and then we're about ready to begin.
Oh, okay, sure.
Well, what are you two doing here? We don't record until tomorrow.
We're making a new promo for All Games Considered, since you were dragging your feet getting one written.
Hey.
She's right, though. It's been too long, and a lot has happened since the last promo.
Yeah, like winning the Gold Emmy for Best Gaming Podcast for 2009.
You mean the one you try to work into the conversation every other episode?
Hey.
Now, there's more than that. There's the new format.
You mean the main show every 2 weeks and the assortment of other features in the meantime?
Right, like games you may never have heard of, the review and news shows.
Don't forget the RPG buffet.
And on the main show, we have more time to focus on gaming topics.
Like board and card games.
And RPGs.
And the people who play them, from the old school to the newest of the new.
But no changeling. Hey!
Find out more at agcpodcast.info. All games considered, because there's more than one true way to play.
He just hangs out in your kitchen.
Yes. Well, we are back, and today on the three-parter, I believe Nathan's going to talk about
Mothman. What
he's been into as far as...
I'm going to review an oldie. Came out on the Commodore 64 in 1988. Well, actually, it came out on the Commodore 64, I believe, in 86.
I've got a bit of a fun rave to go on, and Jeremy is going to be talking a bit about The Walking Dead. And no, not just sort of The Walking Dead in general.
No, the AMC.
Series. Apparently we also have added a Mothman now to our
we are also talking about Mothman. Mothman is on a diet.
He's on a diet.
Do not give him a donut.
Okay.
If he lands on your porch, because he can't fly very well because he's
a moth.
Kind of pudgy.
He's pudgy because the donuts, yes.
So don't give him a donut.
Why do you think the bridge broke?
Well, we will go ahead and kick things off with a bit of a review or what he's into of Pool of Radiant.
What we're into.
I'm not entirely certain when the original version came out. The original version was released on the Commodore 64. I believe it was either I believe it's either 1986 or 88. The PC version followed in 88. The Amiga version followed in 90. And I believe there was an Atari ST version, but I don't know when it came out. The game I'm talking about today is SSI's Pool of Radiance, which, if I understand correctly, was the first SSI game.
1988.
Yeah, if I understand correctly, and you can back this, verify this for me, it was the first game to use the second ed AD&D rules by SSI. It's vastly different than what
It was the first adaptation of TSR's AD&D role-playing game for home computers.
Yeah. Now, the systems they had used before that had used maybe analogous systems like Questron and Fantasy, which is a great game, but we're not talking about
They probably just used D&D and not necessarily weren't. As far as I remember, they weren't classified completely. It's like, this is an advanced Dungeons & Dragons game, it's just, or this is, you know, just Fantasy 1 or whatever. This was the first one that had an advanced Dungeons & Dragons product.
And for the most part, it does appear to follow the system fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
You've got ThatCo.
And it came out in 1988 and was released in 1992 on the NES.
Oh, a 92 on the NES?
That's what it says.
Holy crap.
It was released on the Amiga, the Apple II, the Commodore 64, was released on DOS, Apple Macintosh, NES, and the PC 98.
How was it
was also released on the Atari ST.
How was it compared to Eye of the Beholder?
We're talking years before Eye of the Beholder.
Because I enjoy the Eye of the Beholder.
Okay, let me go into a description of the game real quick, because Jeremy hasn't played it. Okay, the central plot of the game is that New Flan, P-H-L-A-N, I think it's pronounced Flan.
Flan, that's how it always pronounced.
Yeah, they're the Flan.
Is a city that is attempting to recover itself from a horrible destruction that happened that destroyed Flan and monsters overran it and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And where you step in is you are a party of adventurers that are coming in, attempting to make fame and fortune off of recovering the various different aspects of Flan for the new city of Flan to recover it from the evil.
Well, yeah, I know that, just not the video game
now,
aspect.
Now, what you make is you create your party.
Right.
Thankfully, you have the ability to modify your party after you create the characters, because otherwise you'd be screwed, because I rolled for 4 hours and I still had, like, crap for hit points. But you can modify your characters to max them out in the ways that you like, so they actually make comparable characters. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck with a bunch of characters with a lot of stats around 6. Yep. Now, I'm playing the PC version. And the Commodore version, Commodore 64 version, and the Amiga version might be a little different. I do know the Amiga version, because I've played the Amiga version, has hellaciously better sound and hellaciously better graphics, but it is, oh my God, hard. And that's one of the things that I really wanted to talk about first was, oh my God, is this game hard? Coming from games like, you know, Might and Magic 1, which was, I told you, was like kill your best friend hard. This is like wipe your family and the entire genetic profile of you mm-hmm. out hard. You get 6 players, but it follows the D&D rules, AD&D rules, to a T. So it's like, oh, I have a -1 AC. I'm fighting 65 orcs. Well, they surrounded me. That doesn't matter anymore. That -1 AC doesn't matter anymore. I've got 9 hit points. They've got 6. There's 9 of them around me. They're going to wipe me out.
I just remember there's a point in the game where you actually, your fighters got the foul fighter sweep, and then things got a lot easier.
Yeah. When you get the fighter,
oh, hey, there's a little L shape over there. I'm heading right in the middle.
Yeah. You don't get that till level 7, though.
Yeah.
So you're like, you're up to that point.
Makes kobolds a lot more fun.
You're praying for success. And it follows the AD&D rules on dual classing. Or multi-classing. There is no dual classing in the first one, so you can only split your XP, which really, really, really sucks. When you take your main players have 9,000 XP and they're like level 5, and your little fighter mage is level 2-2,
mm-hmm.
and still needs another 10,000 experience points to get up to level 3-3.
They use the old AD&D XP system.
Yeah, you begin to hate the makers of... You begin to hate TSR and the creators of the AD&D system. But where it actually differs from, like, Eye of the Beholder is Eye of the Beholder was done completely in first person. The monsters came down the hallway and you killed them in the hallway.
And you died.
And you died. Well, you die a whole lot in this game, too.
You turn a corner, it's dark, and you're dead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could go get your guys raised pretty much wherever. And this way, you had to go to the temple to do it. But yeah, you could...
Did you have to have money?
Yes. And we're not talking a little bit of money. It's not like, 100 platinum. No, it's 3,000 gold.
About this game is, I know you could loot everything off of
things. You take all their gear.
And you would basically go into the slums, loot the crap out of the dead things, run to the nearest store, doesn't matter which one,
and you just sell everything.
Sell. And there was a trick, because you could tell which was...
which items were magic, because the price would change.
Because you had to cast, or have them identify and cast money, but if you sell, it's like, sell the shield, okay, I'll give you 5,000 gold for it.
Identify that.
I know to identify that now.
Yeah.
Or if you knew what, you know, you could also just save the game, identify it like, oh, that's crappy, I don't want that. Reload, then just go sell it for the $5,000.
But one of the major differences is Eye of the Beholder was all done in first-person perspective with you fighting the monsters on the screen. The way this game differs is when you go into combat, it goes into a tactical overlay map.
Yeah, it's a first-person thing when you're just walking around, but when it enters combat, it goes into a top-down view where you actually have spaces.
That you have to do tactical combat.
How about traps? Are they in first-person?
Yes. Traps are in first-person, and I have never been able to successfully identify and remove a trap. They've always gone off and done horrible damage to my people. That being said, my thief sucks.
Is he a fighter thief, though?
He's a fighter thief.
That's part of it.
Yeah, he sucks. Yeah, but the thing is otherwise you can't keep him alive long enough to get him up to the level. To put it bluntly, the first time I played it, I had a fighter, two clerics, two regular mages, and a regular thief. By the time after I was finished with 10 minutes out in the slums, the first area, which is, you know, the low-level area for first-level people, my fighter and one of my clerics were the only people that weren't dead. Not unconscious, dead.
Do you have a limit on what you can carry?
Yes. You get encumbered. So the first thing you do, of course, when you play is you make sure that all your human characters have an 18 double-aught strength.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't think coinage, actually.
Yes, coinage does weigh too. Coinage does weigh too. I found that out the hard way.
But it takes a lot of gold to make. It does.
Not in this game, it doesn't.
And what's their ratio?
I don't know, but it's like... at one point in time, I had so much coins that even a character that was only wearing armor had a shield and had a weapon... could not carry all the money.
Just remember, on the Commodore version, you could roll your stats and then modify them.
Yeah, and that's what I did. And
which is what you had to do. So you had 18s, and then everyone had 18 double-aught strength as best if they were human, obviously.
Yeah. One of the things.
Everyone had max everything.
One of the things that really harkens back to the old AD&D rules.
Way to play the game.
Yeah. One of the things that really harkens back to the old AD&D rules is that there are certain races that can't play certain classes.
Yeah.
And certain races can't get over a certain stat roll or a certain level in stat. Level. And certain levels. Yeah, it's like, oh, you're playing an elf. Well, you can get to level 9 as a mage, or you can get to unlimited level as a thief, but you can only get to level 4 as a fighter.
Right.
Well, why the hell would I play an elven fighter then? They can only get an 1850 strength anyways.
So really, ultimately, it's going back on it now, is if you're used to 3rd and 4th edition stuff.
You're going to hate this game.
Now, if they would do an updated one.
People like us look back on it very fondly.
Yes, people like me, I played this game when it came out.
I haven't, you loaned me the disc, I haven't installed it yet because I forgot about it, but I totally am going to put it on this laptop and have some fun with it at some point.
Most slow works great on a real machine. DOSBox will work great on that.
This game takes for bloody ever to win.
What's the max level?
It's a huge game.
Well, actually, let me tell you what. Let me go grab the book, and I can tell you what the max levels are for your character. Now, the cool thing about it, and this is one of the things that a lot of people didn't realize at the time, was that the game actually continues...
And it's the Pool of Radiance was a first in a four-part series. Yes.
Yeah, because it's Mithranor.
It was Pool of Radiance, game, then Curse of the Azerbaijan,
Secret of the Silver Blades, and Pools of Darkness.
Yeah, because I never played the last two.
I have the last two.
They're
on that disc. You'll have a good
campaign.
Time with them.
It's just I've never actually played this.
So let's see here. The maximum level for dwarfs is they can't play cleric or magic user. They can do fighter up to 9th or thief unlimited. Humans are the only ones that are unlimited.
That's so weird.
Yeah. Humans are the only ones that don't have an unlimited level. Elves can only be 7th in fighter, 11th in magic user.
Incidentally, Curse of Yazerbaijan, the sequel game, was novelized before it became a game.
Yep.
It was novelized by Jeff Grubb, who I interviewed on the show.
So. Right.
What is that? That's Boris. Okay.
Well, like, what I'm saying is I know they're unlimited, but what's the actual limit?
The level cap? I think the level cap in the first one is 10.
Yeah, because you couldn't get all the really powerful spells at that point.
No. The way the game's set up, there's actually, with the way the game is set up, the amount of experience that you'll get playing it, you will not get higher than 3rd level spells at all with any of the classes, with any of the classes to cast spells. So it's like you're pretty much stuck with Cure Light for the whole game.
And Fireball, which would be a 3rd level.
Fireball spell. is the maximum. Spell you get. And the problem is that it's really hard to find a lot of these spells.
Right.
And buying the spells is ridiculously expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, I found a scroll with 2 spells on it. I could sell it for 50 gold, but to buy a scroll with 2 spells on it from the magic shop is like 22,000 gold.
AD&D, it's ridiculous prices.
Yeah.
So really, if you think about it. if you're a mage making scrolls,
yeah,
and if you have to put your life force in it,
yes, that's true.
I'd be charging
$20,000.
I mean, yeah, it's like
what? That's a year of my life. $20,000 yeah. Right now.
All right, I don't really need your cantrip.
Yes, you do. Trust me, you'll be back.
That's when they. That's when they got rid of when they get rid of the XP needed. It's like,
yeah,
yeah.
Thank God.
But
it's a great. I really love
if
it.
If you ever want to see what it was like to play old games like that, definitely check it out. And one thing I will warn you is to make sure that anybody that does cannot wear heavy armor needs to be equipped with long range weapons and stay the hell away from everything, because if a monster's within a square of you, you can't fire.
Is there any point to have a mage?
Is it
yes. Because they do get fireball, and fireball is very, very useful. Because
yeah.
Otherwise, boom. Yeah, the end of the first area, as Ethan was saying before the game,
trolls.
It's got trolls
in the narrow room
and a half giant
at the very end. So it's like fireball that.
Yeah. and they follow the standard D&D thing. So if you don't kill them with fire or acid, or kill them all the monsters and them quick enough that the combat ends,
they get
back up with all of their
and
hit points.
The trick in the game was if once you knocked one down, if you would have to go put a person standing on the space, and they wouldn't get back up.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it, and they take two squares.
Stab.
Yeah. But Burning Hands actually worked really well at taking them down.
Can you get it anywhere online now? I mean, is it available?
There was a place that had a place called CD Access had it. But I don't know if they have it now.
I don't think it's legally available anywhere, I don't think.
But. You might be able to find it on Amazon for a lot of money, but this would be... GOG Games would be great if they would actually pull out, like, the Forgotten Realms Silver Archive from Interplay.
Mm-hmm. Or if somebody would just do an updated version.
Well, the problem with an updated version is they actually tried something along those lines with Ruins of Mythdranor.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember if you guys remember that game, but it took 2 years after it came out before the fans actually released a patch that made it work.
If you're looking for it, be sure not to get Pool of Radiance, Ruins of Mythdranor.
Because then you'll have to patch the hell out of it.
Yeah, or you just don't play it because it sucked.
The story was kind of crappy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get... they used to have it. They don't have it now.
Yeah, Gold Box Edition of Pool of Radiance on Amazon, $70.
Yeah, and I have 4 of them. I don't know why. Ted had 4 copies. 3 of them were still sealed. I sold them at Gen Con for like $20 a piece.
And now they're on Amazon.
For $70. But let's see.
But you can get them in the Forgotten Realms archives.
Yeah.
That stuff's a lot cheaper.
If you can find the Forgotten Realms Silver Archive, mm-hmm. which is what I have that I let Ethan borrow so that he can play right now because I'm playing the disc version rather than the CD version. It's definitely worth the purchase, and they have the silver. Then they have a couple other ones which are cheaper, but they don't actually come with the actual original Forgotten Realms story arc, which is the 4-part that we talked about earlier. One of the nice things is when you finish the first game, Pool of Radiance, if you do have Curse of the Azure Bonds, you can import your characters from the first game into the second game and continue on whatever level.
I remember we had the 3-game set.
That's important.
That came with
Curse of the Azure Bonds, Secret of the Silver Blades,
Pool of Radiance, and Secret of the Silver Blades.
Yeah, I've never played the
Gold Box
ones.
It came with the hint guide and all that crazy stuff.
Did it come with a map?
Yeah.
Yeah. A little map.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it came with an adventurer's journal,
And
code wheel because it had the...
The first 2 had code wheels. The second 2 actually had to read stuff out of the manual.
Was it one of those go to page such and such, what's word 3 in the second? Yeah.
Because they found that the code wheels were easily broken, whereas the manuals, you had to copy the whole manuals, or if you were incredibly OCD, you copied down every single option. And there was 1,000 and some odd options that it could pull up.
And there were people who did that.
Yeah, and there were people that did it.
And this is to actually run the game? Is it basically the CD key?
It's basically like a CD key.
Well, no, you had to do it every time you loaded the game.
No, not with the third and fourth one.
Well, at least with the code wheel.
The code wheel you had to do at the beginning of every one.
Boom. You had to use the code wheel to go to the right thing and then put in what it said.
That's stupid.
That's how they did it.
Dude, that's the way that the game... That was their copy protection. Silver Edition Archive. Holy crap.
Is that the inbox version, though? Yeah.
Yeah, completely sealed in packages, $184.97. So, okay, look for a used one.
Yes, used, it's like $8.
Yeah.
Used is much better. But I think Pool of Radiance, that's awesome.
Used is $12.95. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely worth, if you can, if graphics aren't the end-all be-all for you, check them out, because the gameplay is great. The one thing that you will have to do if you don't have the manuals is will have to go out and you'll have to find the journals.
You can find them anywhere. Yeah. I mean, they're everywhere.
Yeah, online. Well, the great place would be replacement docs. Yeah. I know they have the adventure journals, because inside the adventure journals, when you open them up, you'll see things that are listed as journal entry such and such, yeah, or tavern entry such and such. And when you're playing the game, you'll see a message pop up that says, you scribe down journal entry 16, or you scribe down in entry 54.
And it doesn't tell you in the game.
It doesn't tell you, because they didn't have, at the time that the games came out, they did not have the technical storage space to be able to put that much text in the game. And read it in the book.
It's a game, it's a time sink, we'll warn you. It'll take you a while to
play. I've been playing it for a week now, almost 2 weeks now, and most of my characters are level 5. Mm-hmm. And that's because I made a lot of missteps.
This is a game from back in the days when graphics weren't the greatest. They had to make up for it in
good gameplay
content, and it's a lot of content.
Yeah,
tons of fun. I enjoyed that a lot of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's you have to think in this game. You can't just. I know a lot of my D&D games devolve into the whole run and kill the monsters. Rah! There are times when you can't really do that. Because
there are times where you have to sneak past certain things and do things. I mean, most of it is a good old fashioned AD&D dungeon crawl for the most part.
Yeah,
and several different areas you go to. But it was entirely get the adventure journal. You could just use the maps because it's all square based. So it's like, hey, we can just take it Zenthal Keep. Boom! Haha! Using it in my 4th edition game now. You know, something like that.
Oh. And Sokol Keep was crazy pain in the butt. All full of undead, which was made me glad I had 2 clerics, because it was like turn undead and it's destroyed. And it's
that
destroyed.
That was destroyed, one nice destroyed, thing. Destroyed, is destroyed, turn destroyed. Undead early on was pretty powerful.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Or make them flee. Yeah. So it's like, oh, they ran away. I still get experience points because they fled combat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it follows the same principle as Baldur's Gate did, and that you're like, oh, I just killed 50 skeletons. Congratulations! Each player gets 13 experience points. Crap.
Yeah, thanks God.
Yeah, but when you finish missions, it's like each player gains 1,000 experience points. So finish the missions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they tell you the missions. You go and talk to people and they go, "Hey, I need you to go do this." Yep. Okay, I'll go do that.
There's lots of reading.
Go talk to him.
Yeah, go talk to the guy across the room. No, there's none of that. He's right there.
Go talk. None of that.
Actually, some of the quests are very, very interesting. One of the quests requires you to sneak in and watch an auction as they're bidding off this magic item of great power. You don't actually. Your goal is not to attack them and try to steal the item. Your goal is just to sneak in, not get seen, not get attacked. Watch the auction from a distance
and see who
gets the magic item. Then go back and tell them about it. And tell them what kind of object it was. And it's like, they don't even do that crap now.
Mm-hmm.
All the quests are like, I need you to go to this area, eliminate this enemy, and then come back and I'll give you this. It's like,
it's great stuff. It's great stuff. I highly recommend it. It's great.
I played the first one. I've played the second one. I've never played them in sequential order. So this will be the first time. Yet.
No turning left and dying?
No, it's not Shattergate.
No, it's... it depends on if you hit the wrong trap.
That is true.
If you hit the poison gas trap outside of Lothar's Well...
Don't go wandering off the slums too far, trust me.
Yeah.
Not until you're high enough level, then you can clear it out and you're fine.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, yeah, I highly recommend you check it out.
Great stuff.
The wheels might be a little hard to find, but if you look around carefully, you can probably find a disassembled wheel so you can print your own copy and put it together.
You can find them online. There's actually people who put it on Flash on websites. You can actually
Because you will need the wheels for the first game.
I mean, obviously people still play it.
Yeah, I have the original copies in the original boxes. I have all 4 of them in the gold box that I'm playing, and those are the ones I installed. And let me tell you, I did not remember how slow floppy drives were until I tried to load a game that was archived and it's compressed on 2 discs. And it's only 2.88 meg, but when the game is uncompressed, it's 8 meg. And you're sitting there watching this 4625 megahertz go as it tries to uncompress stuff. Literally, 15 minutes to install a game. Yep. I'm going, holy crap, didn't take that long to install Civilization 5, and it's 9 gig. But
alrighty.
Check it out. Well worth the price. And the other games on the Silver Edition are really great. It's got all the Eye of the Beholder games. It's got Menza Baranzan, and it's also got
Hillsfar?
It's got Hillsfar, and it's got one other big one and a demo for Blood and Magic. Now, if you can find, there's another one that's called the TSR Masterpiece Collection. It has everything.
I'd recommend, because a lot of times this stuff will turn up, like if you have a half-price bookstore near you or someplace like that, look through their computer discs where they have their discount stuff and just like that are not in the big boxes or anything like that. Usually it'll turn. Sometimes it'll turn up in there.
Yeah, I've not been able to find it. It actually doesn't have everything. It has six games. It's got Strahd's Possession, Dark Sun one and two, the second. What the hell is the name of the world?
Dragonlance?
No, not Dragonlance. It was Strahd's Possession, Ravenloft. Strahd's Possession and the Stone Prophet's Curse.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like Al-Qadim.
Mm-hmm.
And one other one, which I can't see.
So they're good stuff.
Yeah. But, these are the... If you like the D&D system, the classic D&D system, if you've ever played AD&D and you like the system, you thought it was, well, albeit complicated because there was some stuff that made it overly complicated that didn't need to be done, and you want to check them out, see if you can find these copies of the Masterpiece Collection in the Forgotten Realms archives, at least the Silver Edition, because you can also get Volume 1, 2, and 3, and it's just each one of the individual discs by itself. Mm-hmm. But, that kind of it's kind of crap that way.
But there you go.
But yeah, check it out. I highly recommend it. You like D&D, play it.
Once my perfect world was gone, I knew you ruined everything in the nicest way.
The Rave. All right. I have a little bit of a rave to go on as I've just been trolling around on the internet the last day or two looking at various things. And I want to thank all of the conspiracy theorists out there for giving me great gaming ideas. We've talked about David Icke before and his whole crazy lizard people thing. But I gotta say... there are a huge number of conspiracy theories out there, and Wikipedia has them is probably the safest place to go to look at them. But you know what? I want to thank all those crazy nuts out there that go crazy on the conspiracy theories and pop out stuff about alien invasions and underground things. I mean, this stuff is gold for games, and I've been mining several of them for various projects I've been doing, and the superhero game in general has, I have a few in there that I was like, I gotta use that somewhere, because some of these ideas are just too good to pass up. And Jeremy, I know you sort of pointed me in the direction of this, and you just gotta love these things in there about, yes, the Alpha Centauri people are here to microwave our brains mm-hmm. and steal our goats. You know, it's like, this is fabulous. This is stuff you couldn't make up. I mean, some nut has put this out on the internet. Thank you, internet. Has put it out there for you. You can grab it. You can use it. And I say do it. It's fantastic. I'm talking just because we love beating a dead horse. David Icke's stuff is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. The man is absolutely crazy. But
it's so crazy. It could be true.
But as a gamer, you could totally use that stuff gamer, and run with it. It's so great. If you are ever strapped for a good adventure seed or a campaign idea, I say just go on to Wikipedia, look up conspiracy theories, and because they actually have on Wikipedia a list of conspiracy theories, and just look around. It will blow your mind. What is on there?
One of the fun things to do is just go to one of those conspiracy theories and then look up the scientific stuff that's opposite. And then sometimes in the scientific stuff, you find things that are true and crazier.
Yes, there's a list of conspiracy theories on the website, and it is on Wikipedia.
Because Wikipedia is awesome.
Wikipedia is awesome. Things of false flag operations, wars, coup d'etats, official conspiracy theories about the international communists, the Chicago conspiracy trial, assassinations, suppression of technology, development of technology, like the Philadelphia experiment, the Montauk project, high frequency active auroral research program, the Indian Ocean tsunami. There's a theory out there that it was created by a tsunami bomb. There's the chemtrail theory, which is clouds behind aircraft alleged to be chemical spraying performed in some secretive purpose. This is just so. There's tons of great stuff out there. You just go look at it on the web. I mean, Majestic 12, the Illuminati, Freemasons, Masonic conspiracy theories.
Except sometimes when you look at this and you do check the scientific thing out, then you find out some of the true things, and you're like, "Oh that's my god,
that's worse than the paranormal."
I'd rather see the conspiracy theory. Yeah.
And there's tons of alien invasion ones and UFO conspiracy theories. There's too many to list outright. Apocalyptic prophecies, Bible conspiracies. It's just so awesome. It really is. It's great. Theories about why some planes have crashed, why various disasters happen. If it's out there, there's a conspiracy theory.
Some of it's insulting.
Some of it is insulting, yes. But some of it is just what I'm going for. Some of it is just brilliant and perfect for using in a game. Yes, it's ludicrous, but you know what? In a game setting, it's perfect. So I say hit a Wikipedia list of conspiracy theories. There's tons of good stuff on there. I can't stress enough how much fun I've had just looking through them. Great fun. Check it out.
The review.
All right. So probably for the last, I think, 3 weeks, maybe a little bit longer, I've been watching the AMC show Walking Dead, and it's a zombie show.
Mm-hmm. It's based on a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm. And at first you're like, okay, well, a zombie show, yay. Well, Walking Dead is done very, very well. Yes, there are zombies. They do not appear to be supernatural zombies. They appear to be potentially scientifically caused zombies.
As far as I mean, the first two episodes I've seen and the comics I've read, they haven't really gotten into why the zombies are there or what caused it. It's just they're there.
The last episode, they just got to the CDC and the door opened up. But the thing I like about it is the characters.
Oh, yeah.
The characters, I mean, just make this show. There are characters that you hate. There's this guy that beats his wife. And what happens to him is the funniest, awesomest, coolest, greatest justified thing in the world. It's zombie-related, by the way.
Oh.
Then you have...
Like, I've only seen the first two episodes, but...
You have almost the main character, which is a police deputy, a sheriff deputy, and he just wants to find his family. And he doesn't... He's not a superhero.
No.
He screws up.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
But but he's trying to do the right thing. And he makes it clear that we don't kill the living. Not anymore. We just can't. And it's about survival... And characters will die. They will die. The world is kind of depressing, but the show is just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it does so much better than Rubicon, which I watched, which is a spy. I watched a few episodes, and it was cool.
Well, the ratings for this one keep going up.
Well. And the thing is...
They've already renewed it for a second season.
That's awesome, because these are normal people that are put into...
They renewed it for a second season when the second episode aired. They basically said, we're renewing
it. It's good. I mean, the camera work is really cool. Mm-hmm. The characters are real. I mean, they're realistic people. How they act, doing stupid things, doing smart things, you know... how they grieve, how they, you know, are trying to survive, you know, the panic, everything. The world itself, I mean, this isn't a fantasy world. It's America. And
America.
It, I am enjoying it. I have not enjoyed a show like this in a long time. Mm-hmm. I actually actively want to... I want Sunday to come for 9 o'clock so I can watch The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. I will kick people out of my house.
Well, the first season is 6 episodes, where it should be coming up on the last episode of the season.
The last episode will be this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be this weekend.
Because
we're not getting new episodes till next October.
See, that's lame. They should be coming out sooner, and they should send them to me.
Yeah, true. I would prefer that they keep the quality there.
Oh, yeah. If they need to take some time.
DVDs come out in March.
The quality is great.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. Because if you like zombies, mm-hmm. and you like great actors and a great story, a simple mm-hmm. story. I mean, on the surface, it's simple.
What makes a good zombie story isn't the zombies. It's the characters.
Except the other thing about it is there's walk-on roles.
Right.
You can win zombie walk-on roles, and I think that's
funny.
Funny.
That's great.
Because they've already pointed out one guy that I'm pretty sure was a zombie walk-on role, and the zombies are pretty sweet. But you're right. It's not zombies.
It's not about the zombies. It's about people and how horrible they can be to each other.
How horrible they can be, but also how great they can be.
Right.
And, okay, I don't know if they did this on purpose, but knowing zombie video games, I've started classifying zombies in different categories. Mm-hmm. You have the normal shambling zombie. Mm-hmm. You have the zombie with the rock. He's a little bit tougher. And you have the zombies who can climb. Not all zombies can climb. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if they meant to do that on purpose, but for the geek who knows video games and other games, that is awesome. Also, you kind of look at the characters and you're like, hey, I've played one of these. Possibly in, what's the one?
Well, they have tons
Left
of,
for Dead.
They have,
yeah.
They have tons of material to go out on. The comic book, I think, is past 100 issues.
From what
now.
I've heard of the comic book, though, it's really depressing.
It is, but it's really good. I've read the first graphic novel, and of what I've seen of the TV series, it follows right along with it, and Kirkman, I think, is the guy, Robert Kirkman,
I think
the guy who wrote it. Is involved in the series. I mean, he's a producer on it. I think he helps write scripts. But I mean,
and it's
really well
it's
done,
just filmed well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to see a lot of shows filmed like this. And AMC, I think. Well, it's the same with what's the weird one they did?
The Prisoner.
The Prisoner, different than the original Prisoner, mm-hmm. but I loved how it was shot. Mm-hmm. I loved the characters in it. Totally different show. But if AMC keeps doing this, I may become a very big AMC fan.
Oh, their series are really supposed to be great. Mad Men's supposed to be excellent.
I just haven't started it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that I'm not really... But this at least was geeky enough, yet mm-hmm. cool enough that I was like, I need to
watch the last couple episodes of Walking Dead. And so far, I'm leaning towards I'll probably be buying the set when it comes out on Blu-ray.
So my main review is about Walking Dead, and I really... think everybody should watch a portion of it. Mm-hmm. It's far superior than most of the shows on Sunday night.
And most movies. Easily.
And I hope they don't ever make a movie out of this.
No.
This needs to be a show.
They wouldn't be able to do
this. This would be a bad movie. Unless it was like how...
It's like the Song of Fire and Ice comes out next year.
Yeah.
It's like you couldn't make a movie out of that.
Which...
It just wouldn't happen.
Now, I have a very small add-on review to this. I still, and I've missed a few episodes because I'm not as excited about, but I still enjoy it, Stargate Universe. And the reason I really like it, again, is because of the characters. This is one thing that sci-fi actually has done well. They, Tuesday nights, 8 o'clock, at least in my area, and it's Stargate, but it's Stargate with, again, normal people. Smart normal people, and some of them. But most of these people are just your typical people stuck on a spaceship out in the middle of nowhere. And it's written well. It's a mm-hmm. neat show. You might want to check it out. Even if you're not a Stargate fan, if you're kind of a sci-fi fan, you might want to check this one out too. So my two recommendations, Walking Dead, definitely. Everybody should watch that. And they usually do a encore show, mm-hmm. so if you miss it...
An encore presentation. Plus, I think they leave the episode up. You can watch it on AMC.com.
And if AMC keeps doing this type of thing, mm-hmm. and where it's not just your run-of-the-mill, I don't want run-of-the-mill. I want something like this.
Yeah.
Where it's a cool zombie show. Not just gore. There is gore.
Yeah, it is a gory show.
And you
especially
will,
for it being on a cable.
And it plays on stereotypes.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you'll start figuring out, though, that certain people, even though you might think they're something, they turn out to be better than they are. I mean, mm-hmm. it's human nature. And I like how human nature is coming out, even if you cringe sometimes.
Yes. But it is a cool show. I've
Walking
Dead. I've only seen the first two
Sunday
episodes.
Sunday at 9 o'clock is the new episodes. Sounds like the last one for the season's coming up. That makes me sad.
I think the second season's going to be more. I think it's going to be 8 or 10.
I will have to be looking out for that because I do mm-hmm. not want to miss one.
Well, and I'd rather they take their time and keep it.
That is true.
Good quality.
Keep it to good quality, but make sure there's enough commercials out so I know it's coming.
Yes.
Maybe send me an email.
I think like this year they're probably going to premiere it on Halloween.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
That's what they did this year.
Oh, and the nice thing is, right after, like the next weekend, three weekends in, I had missed the second one. They ran all three of them from 7 to 8, 8 to 9, 9 to 10.
Nice.
And so Robin got to see the first one that she had missed. We both got to see the next ones, and then I got to see the new one. So
nice.
I hope they do that. So if AMC keeps this up, and hey, I haven't been excited about TV in a long time. This is great.
Cool.
There will always be people trapped in intolerable situations. There will always be people who have to hide what they are for fear of persecution. There will always be attempts to suppress a minority. There will always be people in power who are corrupt. There will always be megalomaniacs who want to take control of everything. And the people thought least likely to speak out, least likely to make a difference, always will. The Vajra Enterprises Fiction Podcast, updated every other weekend with stories from the worlds of Vajra Enterprises games, including The Dark and Dangerous City of Fates Worse than Death, The Magical and Mysterious Tibet, The Cosmological and Ontological Horror of In Dark Alleys, The Post-Apocalyptic Savagery of Kid World, and The Haunted Past of Hoodoo Blues. www.indarkalleys.com.
We are back, and we have a few random encounters to go over today. I've got, let's see, gotta track it down. Got an email from, Mr. Mike Frolinetto. Mike Frolinetto. You like that? Just wanted to say, I really should have sent something before now, but I want to let you know, however belatedly, how much I've been enjoying Gamer's Haven. I started listening around episode 3, and it's always been at the top of my list when a new episode drops. Okay, I'm not completely caught up with the actual play, though I did really enjoy the return of Little Bear at the end of Deadlands. So keep up the good work. I've also got a news item for you. Open Design, the publishers of Kobold Quarterly and Green Ronin, recently announced a patronage project adventure for Pathfinder set in Freeport. As a lead designer, I'm excited about it and just trying to get the word out. So,
cool.
I'm going to talk into Mike, hopefully get some of those people on here to talk a bit more about that.
I've heard good things about...
Open Design is good stuff. Open Design is very good stuff. And I have talked to it's Chris Primus and Wolfgang Bauer. Both have been guests on the show at one point. So, let's see. I got... got an email. People might remember an episode back or two. I sort of talked a bit about Misfit Studios. Stephen Trustrom from Misfit Studios emailed us and said, I just listened to the podcast and was glad to hear you enjoyed the Misfit Studios product you've seen so far. To address the Savage Worlds PDF and your desire to see them in print, I can say that there are plans to do a print compilation once we reach a benchmark of PDF material. As for the Superlink content we publish, Better Mousetrap is indeed one of our more popular choices, with another being Metahuman Martial Arts, which I suggest you have a look at if you're at all interested in upping the martial arts aspects of your M&M superhero games.
Right.
By the way, both of these Superlink products are slated for third edition upgrades, which I thankfully got a jump on due to my involvement with the DC Adventures RPG. Thanks and cheers. Thanks, Stephen, for the email. I have yet to respond to your email, but I will. I haven't had a chance to.
We'll let Mothman do it.
We will let Mothman, or giving Paul. What, we're going to have to name this Mothman, you know, because we got Paul the
Mothman. Let's call him Chubby.
Chubby. Chubby the Mothman. All right.
It'll make him want
to
go on a diet.
You heard it here first, folks. We have Chubby the Mothman is a new addition to our menagerie.
And don't feed him donuts.
But thanks for the email, Stephen. I've really enjoyed the Misfit Studio stuff that has been coming out. And if you guys get PDF or get print versions of that stuff out, I look forward to picking it up as soon as I can. I'm also highly interested in seeing your Mutants and Masterminds mission stuff.
That would be neat.
That stuff's really good. I've been enjoying all that good stuff. And finally, before we wrap things up, we actually got a voicemail to listen to. So I will go ahead and play that right now.
Greetings, this is Jim Ryan. I know it's been a little while since I called, so I figured I'd go ahead and contact you guys again. I just wanted to say how sad I am that the Deadlands game has ended. I really enjoyed listening to it, but it did come to a very cool conclusion, and I enjoyed the ending quite a bit. So good job, guys. Good job. Also, I am pleased to hear that you guys have been enjoying playing Dawn of Worlds. I had a similarly enjoyable experience with it, and I'm currently playing in a world that a group of us put together using it. And so it's a lot of fun. Could use a little bit of tweaking here and there, but it is a lot of fun. I'm also using it with a second group to put together a sort of a D&D / Call of Cthulhu type world for my own nefarious purposes. But enough about that. It's a lot of fun. I also wanted to say that I was very pleased to hear Nathan's retro gaming review, as he talked about some of my old favorites. He didn't mention this, so I don't know if you guys know about this already or not, but apparently the people doing the Silver Lining managed to get a new fan license from Activision, so they went ahead and they actually have started releasing it. They're up to the release of Part 2 now, I believe. I've already played through Part 1. It's a bit simplistic, but it's sort of just getting everyone used to the interface, and it looks really good, and I'm looking forward to trying out Part 2. So I think that at least there was some forward motion on that, amazingly. Well, guys, just wanted to call and touch base. Awesome show as always. Take care, and I will talk to you later. Bye.
Okay. Yeah, to answer his questions about the retro gaming thing, yes, I did know that the Silver Lining actually managed to release the game. I do follow the news quite carefully on various different tech sites. I have played the first episode. I agree that it's a little slow-paced and a little easy to get around. And for a game created just by the sheer love of a product by a bunch of people that, you know, in their spare time, the game is incredible. And it's the first part of, I think it's 9 parts. I didn't know that the second part was coming out already. I haven't just checked back at the site lately. I do know that the remake of Space Quest 2 is coming out this Christmas. So, or Space Quest, yeah, Space Quest 2 is this Christmas. And Space
sent us this voicemail just before Thanksgiving, so about 10 days ago.
So yeah, I'm stoked for that. I found a really cool website that deals with retro gaming, and I'd like to give a shout out to the website people who run it, Bill LoJudas, Matt Barton, his name is Max. I can't remember his last name. They run a website. It's called Armchair Arcade. It's attached to the
armchairarcade.com.
It's attached to a podcast called why can't I do it now? Let's see here. Why are you doing this to me now, stupid or Google? Armchair Arcade. They do a podcast called Armchair Arcade
podcast.
There you go.
It's they call it an internet radio show, mm-hmm. as they originally were called before they got turned into a podcast.
Sure. And take a listen to which episode?
Episode 5, the MMOs. Uh-huh. Andre Fauché, Rebecca, and I sat down and talked with Max and Matt about our involvement with MMOs and our feelings and thoughts on MMOs. And out of like a 2 hour and 40 some odd minute show, our chunk is like an hour and 28 minutes. I have not listened to it because I feel really uncomfortable listening to myself talk, but the rest of the show is pretty darn cool. And some of their previous shows, they're only on episode 5 on the Armchair Radio. But if you really like the retro games and you love to get your fix on it, check out on YouTube Matt Barton, who is one of the creators of Armchair Arcade. He does a show called Matt Chat, and he's up to, I think, episode 83, and he basically he does reviews and talks about classic video games. The first one he did was, of course, Pools of Radiance. Can't be done in any way but that. And one of the amazing things is that he's had a lot of interviews with people in the industry that have made the games, not the like companies that manufacture them, but the people who created them. Like, he had a 3 or 4 part interview with Al Lowe, who's the creator of such classics as The Black Cauldron on the PC, the Leisure Suit Larry series, of course, from Sierra, and Freddy Farkas, Frontier Pharmacist. And he had like a 4 part interview with him, and it was great to hear his side of how the things were done, because you never hear from the actual programmers and creators their viewpoint on how the things went, because sometimes what you hear them saying goes completely against what everybody else is saying. So, yeah, I know I've rambled on for a lot, but definitely if you are a retro game person, loves old RPGs and old computer games and console games for that matter, check out Matt Chat and Armchair Arcade. They got a nice little forum going. There's not a whole lot in it right now, but the more people that join and share their thoughts and opinions, the better the place will be. And I'm hoping if I can get into contact with Matt Barton again, I really would like to interview him on our show.
Get him on the show.
Because he's really cool. And as I mentioned before, he wrote Dungeons and Desktops, which was a comprehensive book about computer role-playing games from like the dawn of computer role-playing games all the way up to a couple years ago.
Very nice.
And with Bill Lojudis, which is one of the co-owners of Armchair Arcade, if I understand correctly, he wrote Vintage Games, which is a book about video games all the way back from the early 60s all the way up to like, I think it was 4 years ago when the book came out. Really cool book. I've actually had a chance to look at that one. I want to buy it, but we don't have any local copies, so I'd have to buy it from Amazon. And Amazon estimates like 6 weeks before I'd get it. So... But definitely check it out. It is a cool place. The people who run it are really cool people. I check it every day and post comments and stuff. And kind of shockingly, I decided I was going to sit down and write something on Abandonware and why some reasons why it might exist. And just did it as a blog, because anybody can create a blog.
Mm-hmm.
And it got posted to the front page.
Very nice.
Yeah, I was shocked. I'm honored that they think that my horrible, horrible writing skills were, and the subject was good enough to merit people being able to see it on the front page.
Cool. Well, we got a link up to them on our website, so be pretty awesome. Speaking of blogs and whatnot, we are sort of in partnership here and there with Troll in the Corner still. So you can go to trollitc.com. They talk about all things gaming, including video games. You might talk to Ben over there about doing some video game stuff for him. I'm sure he'd love to put some stuff up. And Jim, thanks for the call. We love it when people actually use our voicemail line. As for the end of Deadlands, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm also, I guess, in a twisted way, glad that you're sad it's gone. That means you enjoyed it enough. So, really enjoyed running it. So, you know, thanks again for the call. Thanks for listening, of course. You guys can, of course, give us a call at our voicemail line at 877-416-1270. Please call the line and give us a tell us a few words about your gaming experience, or if you have any comments on the episode, or if you want us to talk about something. Hey, drop us a line. As always, hit our website, gamershavenpodcast.com. Comment on episodes. Hit our forums. I think we got a great group of people on there now, and the forums are really shaping up well again ever since the implosion and relaunch. So. Good stuff. Good stuff. Unless there's anything else we all need to add.
Not that I can think of.
Jeremy?
Nope.
Alrighty, well, this is Ethan, Nathan, and Jeremy signing off. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. You can also call us toll-free and leave a message to be played on the show by dialing 1-877-416-1270. That's toll-free, 877-416-1270. On our website, you'll also find our actual play podcasts chronicling our misadventures through all things role-playing. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. Some music in this podcast is used with permission of Joe Hero Band at joehero.com. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
That's not canon.